Now, I meant to talk about something else earlier on, and I forgot what it was. I've remembered what it is again, but I've also forgotten. And that's really what adulthood is like most of the time. You know, you spend a lot of time walking back to the room to get the thing that you left the room so that you would go and use it somewhere else, and on your way back to the room to get the thing, you forget not only what it is, but what room it was in. And you're faced with the people who love you looking at you going, "What do you want? Why are you here?" And you go, "I don't know." You spend an awful lot of time like that. And children aren't like that, and that, which is why they look so young, because they always have a sense of style and purpose. When they're walking around, they have a very definite purpose. They're walking and walking, and it's a great walk as well. It's not an adult sort of bemused shuffle. It's that, "I'm going over here." You say, "Why are you going over there?" "Because I have a harmonica." "What are you doing with a harmonica?" "I'm going to put it in the toilet." And "Why are you doing that?" "Enough questions! Goodbye!" Because children express themselves. That's how they look young and vibrant and alive, and why we all envy them. The child, you know, the children can be incredibly difficult to understand when you're grown up. You forget that you were a child. Something simple like a child going to bed. You know, you say, "Bedtime, bedtime, bedtime." That's not what the child hears. What the child hears is, "Lie down in the dark. For hours. And don't move. I'm locking the door now." So the child has trouble with that, so of course you make a concession. You read the fairy tale or something, you know, all the wisdom of the world compacted into a little story. And you say, "There was a little girl lost many, many miles from home, walking through the woods late at night with the creatures all hooting and howling in the bushes around her, stepping over the roots of trees. And she came to the old sty and began to climb it, but it broke, you see. It broke and she fell down. But then when she got herself up, she was all right, and you could see the lights at home. And she began to walk towards home, and then a thing ate her."
"Good night."
"Night, night." You probably sent the child to bed because you were just tired talking to the child, because the child asks you questions. You see, and this is one of the great things about having a child. You look forward to teaching this child about the world and how it works. But children are like children, but they're bigger and they're webbed. They're not really interested in your views on the world. You know, they have their own questions. What is the name of the spaces in between the bits that stick out on a comb? I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, what do you call the place underneath the kettle? "I don't know! Bedtime, bedtime." It's difficult. Children sleep in your bed. This is part of having children. It's very important for a child's development to sleep in the grown-up's bed, because their bones are growing in particular directions. You see, what happens is children are actually very sophisticated. They sleep in your bed for a reason. The child is born, it takes a look around, it thinks, "Well, this isn't quite what I'd hoped for. These people are idiots. I wouldn't have painted the house like this at all. But I've got to make the best of it. So how do I? I've got to maximize my resources. So the key thing is to stop these people having any more children." So children get urine samples sent through the post and sprinkle it on their beds. They're busy people. They don't have time to pee the beds themselves. And then they crawl into your bed. And because their bones are growing and everything, they can only sleep in certain positions, obviously. The crucifix and the swastika tend to be the most popular. Sometimes a combination of the two. But the thing that really relaxes a child is to have the big toenails lodged squarely in your respective genitalia. That ensures a blissful night's slumber. Then the sexual kidnapping is complete. No touchy-touchy, no kissy-kissy. You two need lots of sleep. I have many questions for tomorrow. Very important. And I think sometimes I'd love to be like you. Cool and calm and unemotional. Protestant, in short. It's a fantastic religion. It makes absolutely no demands upon you at all, which is why it's not a great religion. All great religions are built on shame. You don't have any of that if you're Protestant. You go to the church, you sing a few hymns, have a cup of tea, everybody goes home and has a wank. You see, you have the freedom of mind to walk into a room and see a plate of biscuits, say. And you look at them and you think, well, there's a plate of biscuits. I might have a biscuit. I might not. I might have one later. I might put it in my pocket and give it to somebody else. I don't really mind. It's just a biggie. It's not like that if you're Catholic. You walk in the room, you see the plate of biscuits. There could be other things going on in the room. The room could be on fire. It could be full of naked clowns killing each other with crossbows. This doesn't matter to you because all you see is the plate of biscuits. Because you think, oh no, I'm going to eat them. I know I am. I'm going to eat them. I'm going to eat them all. Oh no, I know I am. I'm even walking towards them. I wasn't aware of that, but I am now. I've actually started to eat the biscuits. Help me, help me. Oh, they're delicious. Oh, the shame, the shame, the shame. Oh, I can't tell which is nicer. The biscuit or the shame? It's a child's biscuit. That's perfect. I don't deserve a grown-up one with dark chocolate on it. Oh, they're so nice. Now they're all gone. The shame. The shame. That's all I've got left. Nothing can make me feel better now. Except cocaine. On and on and on. And yet, people still turn to Jesus. You will notice, though, that the kind of people who turn to Jesus tend to be the sort of people who haven't done that well with everybody else. Like the people who are here, for instance. They say to themselves, well, I can't get it right in this lifetime, but in the next life, it'll be right. In the spiritual afterlife, which makes no sense at all, really. It's your choice, of course, if you want to believe all this. But why would you want a spiritual afterlife? Surely you should sort your spirit out now while you're here. The spirit is what is challenged. The spirit is what suffers all the knocks. The spirit is the thing you've got to master. If you are going to have an afterlife, why not just have a physical afterlife? Just come back as a tentacle and a set of lips looking for huge lumps of chocolate to fuck. It'd be much more, you know, reasonable. Because the fact is, you prop yourself up with your compulsions all the time. I'm quite a compulsive person. I only worked this out recently. I'm compulsive, but I'm also very indecisive. I don't know what I want, but I know that I want it now. And I thought for ages, you know, everybody was like this. I thought everybody woke up a couple of mornings a week in the shower with Marmite clotted handcuffs, but apparently not. You know, there are sensible choices, obviously. I don't take loads of drugs because this is tedious. Everything becomes too routine. You take the drugs, you stay there for 9 hours going, and you run out of, and you have to go and buy more. It's just this endless cycle of repetition. I don't get it. And, you know, you can get addicted to all sorts of things except fruit. And but Jesus isn't a very good role model for children, I don't think. You know, they'd be far better off with somebody who's less whiny. He did complain an awful lot, Jesus. Oh, nails, oh, vinegar. You're the Messiah. Get on with it. Would you stop? Batman is a far more useful role model for children. He was orphaned as well. He didn't moan about it. He went to Tibet and did press-ups and things with Bunsen burners and came back and put on the ears and got up on the roof ready for anything, dealing with his own personal issues. Jesus moaned all the time. You'll see this in the pictures, pointing outside of the picture, in all the Catholic iconography, pointing, I want that one. What's he got? He's got cream on his. Oh, I thought, what is that? Or blaming people. It was him. He hurt my feelings. But you lose so much of that natural, human panache that children have. No, you tell the child to go to bed, and it puts that against what it wants to do, and synthesizes, and says, I hate you. I really hate you. As they're scratching their arse with a toy elephant. Now, if you could retain that sense of self in your adult life, you'd have a totally different experience. At work, telling your boss, I hate you. I'm scratching. I really do. Every day is the same fucking shit. I don't know why I keep coming back. Difficult to keep a hold of, though. That's why adults are confused a lot of the time. Adults are terribly confused, messed up people. That's because they forget, really. They don't have to pretend all the time. Really, the fact is, you're not an adult at all. You're just a tall child holding a beer. having a conversation you don't understand. The Middle East, yeah, I know, it was really bad. Yeah, I wouldn't have done that, yeah. Hysterectomy, very painful. The shoulder is a very painful area. Being intimidated. I get intimidated by men, by other men. You know, we were talking about the driving lessons. There are guys talking in pubs about machines and cars. There's a whole culture of that. They're talking about the granumbulator on their whinny whacks of their car. And then they turn to me and go, what kind of car have you got? I go, I don't know, but when I get one, it's going to be a blue one. Men are always intimidating one another, competing with one another. They're more aggressive, I suppose. They did this study, actually, in the University of Chicago with women, and they worked out that women are incredibly good at reading male faces. You know, there's two types, apparently. There's a kind of round, soft, sensitive-faced person who's a good person to have around and is good for you, good for a family, gentle and caring and can empathize. And then there's the other type, which is more kind of stronger jawed, more masculine looking, smaller eyes. You know, King Kong is what we're talking about here. And this, interestingly, this was the kind of male favored by women for what was called in the study brief relationships. What the fuck is that? One where you don't have to roll your tights down the whole way? What is a brief relationship exactly?